Welcome back, everybody, for another deep dive. And today we're taking a look at something I think we can all relate to. You know those parts of the Bible that kind of make you scratch your head and go, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, the phrases that sound super familiar, but when you actually try to break them down, it's like, wait, what did that even mean?
Yeah, it's kind of like reading a book in a language you only kind of sort of understand.
Right. And that's where our deep dive source material comes in handy today. We're unpacking this lecture by Dr. George Payton. And he's this total pro in the world of Bible translation. What's so cool is that he was actually teaching other translators when he gave this talk.
Oh, wow.
So we're getting like the inside scoop here, the pro-level secrets.
Yeah, and what I think is really neat about Payton's approach is that he kicks things off with this story about his son. His kid, probably like 10 years old, asks him, "Dad, what if you translate the Bible wrong and it lasts forever?"
Whoa. Yeah, that's a heavy question. I don't think I was thinking about the eternal impact of translation when I was 10 years old.
Right.
But it does make you realize, you know, the weight of these words, right?
Totally. And Payton uses that story to introduce this big idea. You know, how can we be sure we're really getting the meaning of these ancient texts? Especially when the way we use language has changed so much over time.
Okay, so let's get into Payton's method here. Because our goal isn't just to, you know, summarize his lecture.
Yeah.
It's to equip you with the tools to decode those tricky Bible passages yourself. So he starts by kind of laying out the problem with these examples like prophet of the Most High, knowledge of salvation, or by the will of God. And they all sound so familiar, but if somebody was like, hey, explain that to me concisely.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to pin down, isn't it? You know what it's getting at, but to put that into clear modern language, it's tough. And I think Payton's point is that, you know, these phrases aren't necessarily wrong. It's just they require a lot of work from the reader. Like you have to untangle the meaning.
Yeah, which has got to be even tougher if you're brand new to Christianity or you're coming from a culture where the way you express ideas is totally different.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the Bible shouldn't feel like you need a PhD in ancient linguistics to understand it.
Right.
Right.
Okay, so Payton walks us through his process, and he uses this really great example from Acts 13.12. It's where the proconsul is amazed by the teaching of the Lord. Sounds pretty straightforward at first glance, right? But Payton's like, hold on. Is it actually clear what amazed him?
Like, was it the content of the teaching? Was it the way it was presented? Were there like miracles happening alongside it? Payton says we have to be like detectives here.
Oh, I love a good Bible mystery.
Right.
So how do we start sleuthing? Like, what are our first steps?
So Payton breaks it down this way. You've got to identify the verb. You've got to identify the actors and you've got to identify the content.
Okay.
So in this case, the verb is teaching.
Yeah.
The actors are Paul, Barnabas, and the proconsul. And the content is the scriptures and the things about Jesus. It's like solving a puzzle.
I'm already seeing how this is so much more active than just passively reading, right?
Yeah.
You have to like engage with the text differently.
Totally. And what Payton emphasizes is that it's not enough to just, you know, look up the definition of each word in the dictionary.
Right.
You have to consider the context, the historical background, the cultural nuances. And even then, he says, even then, the best translators approach this with a lot of humility.
Humility. Why humility?
Well, because, you know, we can never fully step into the shoes of the original writers and the original audience. There's always going to be a gap between their world and ours. The goal is to get as close to the intended meaning as possible. But we always have to acknowledge that we are interpreting through our own lenses.
Okay, so we've got our detective hats on. We're considering the context. What's the next level of Bible code breaking that Payton kind of throws at us here?
So he introduces this concept of genitive phrases. Don't worry, we don't have to get super technical with the grammar here. But basically, these are phrases where one noun possesses or modifies another.
Okay.
So give me an example of a genitive phrase.
Okay, so an example would be something like,
the deceitfulness of riches. And Payton actually tells this great story about how that phrase stumped even the most experienced Tanzanian translators he was working with.
Wait, even experienced translators struggle with that?
Oh, yeah.
I'm already feeling a little less bad about my own confusion.
Yeah. What's interesting is why they struggled. Payton's team initially thought that that phrase meant cheating somebody out of their money, just because of how their language framed the concept of deceit.
So even if the individual words seem clear, the way that they're put together can totally change the meaning depending on your cultural background.
It's like one of those optical illusions. The same image can be seen in two different ways depending on your perspective.
I see. Okay, I'm starting to see how all of this connects. We're not just looking up words. We're thinking about context. We're questioning our own assumptions. I feel like we're ready to tackle a real head-scratcher now.
Let's do it.
Let's move on to a passage that's notoriously dense and metaphorical. That worries of the world section from Mark 4. I think everyone's had a moment of like, wait, what? When reading that one.
Like a theological word puzzle crammed into a few verses.
Okay, so let's apply Peyton's method here.
Yeah.
First up, worries of the world. Who's doing the worrying here? And what does the world represent in this context?
Those are really good questions. Remember, we have to think beyond just the surface level.
Okay.
The world isn't literally out there worrying. It's a symbol. It's standing in for something else.
Okay, so if we're thinking contextually, the world probably represents.
The world probably represents those worldly concerns, anxieties, the things that pull us away from spiritual matters. Not that they're bad in and of themselves, but they can become a problem if we let them consume us.
So it's like people who are caught up in the world that are doing the worrying, like their focus is all misplaced.
Oh,
okay, and then we get that phrase again, that deceitfulness of riches. And it's so interesting because it's like riches are personified here. Like they can actually trick us.
Yeah. It's very powerful imagery, and it makes us think about how wealth can be appealing, but it can lead us down a path that ultimately doesn't fulfill us. Peyton actually suggests that it's the allure of riches, that promise of happiness, that's deceitful.
Because true happiness doesn't come from material things.
Right.
Which is a pretty consistent theme throughout the whole Bible.
Exactly. And then we had that last phrase in that little trio desires for other things. It's a bit vague, but it definitely ties into the first two.
Right. It's like this whole passage is building on itself. It starts with the worries. Then it goes to the deceit of riches. And then this like broader idea of like desiring anything that distracts us from, you know, our relationship with God.
Mm.
Almost like a formula for spiritual stagnation.
You're getting it. You're picking up on Peyton's method really quick. You're seeing how even those little word choices like personifying riches really adds this emotional weight to the passage and gives it a deeper meaning.
Yeah. Okay, so we've broken this dense passage down phrase by phrase, and already seeing it differently. But now I'm really curious, how did Peyton actually reword this section to try to make it clearer?
Well, Peyton doesn't claim to have like the perfect translation.
Right.
Which I appreciate, you know. But he does offer this version that tries to unpack those genitive phrases and make the overall meaning a little bit more accessible to a modern reader.
Okay.
Want to hear how it sounds?
Yeah, lay it on me.
Okay, so Peyton's translation of that section of Mark 4 reads, "The seed that fell among the thorns represents those who hear the word, but the worries of this life, the false promise of riches, and the desire for other things come in and choke the word, making it unfruitful."
Okay, well, that is so much clearer. Even just hearing you read it out loud, I feel like I can breathe again. It's like all those like tangled threads have been like sorted out.
It's like you took those abstract ideas and made them concrete, you know?
Yes.
He doesn't say worries of the world. He says worries of this life. And instead of deceitfulness of riches, he talks about the false promise of riches.
Yeah, it's like he did the heavy lifting for me. My brain was doing so much work in the background before trying to put it all together. But doesn't this raise the question of like, is there one right way to translate these things?
That's such a good question. And it gets to the core of what Peyton's trying to teach. He's not saying that, you know, his is the only way. It's more like translation is this process of, you know, you keep getting closer and closer to the intended meaning. He actually compares it to approaching an asymptote in math. You keep getting closer, but you never quite reach the line.
Oh, that's a cool analogy.
Yeah.
So it's not about finding the right answer. It's about constantly like refining our understanding.
Exactly. And that's where he brings in that idea of humility again. Even the most, you know, super skilled translators have to admit that maybe they don't have it all figured out.
Speaking of not having it all figured out, Peyton tells this hilarious story about his kids asking him what Romans chapters 1-7 meant. And he just says,
"I have no idea."
I laughed out loud when I read that.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Here's this world-renowned Bible scholar. And even he is, like, stumped by some parts.
It's so refreshing, right? It's like, oh, it's okay to not have all the answers. It's okay to wrestle with the text. It's okay to ask questions. That's where the real learning begins.
So what would Peyton say to someone who's like, okay, this is all really cool, but I'm not an expert. How am I supposed to apply this to, like, my own personal Bible study?
He actually addresses that. He says, you don't have to be a professional translator to benefit from these techniques. He encourages everyone to become more active readers, you know, really engage with the text in a more critical and thoughtful way.
So where do we even begin? Do we all need to go out and buy a bunch of expensive commentaries and Greek lexicons?
Those can be helpful, but Peyton really emphasizes the simple tools are some of the most powerful. He talks about reading different translations, comparing how they handle those difficult passages.
Yeah.
And then, you know, talk about it with other people.
Oh, that reminds me of Iron Sharpens Iron, right?
Yes.
Like bouncing ideas off each other, challenging each other's assumptions. That's where the growth happens.
Absolutely. And Peyton even says, you know, try rewording those passages yourself, just like he did with those verses in Mark. It's not about like coming up with a publishable translation or anything. It's more about just wrestling with the text and making yourself think about what it really means.
Okay, so this is starting to feel a lot more doable.
Yeah.
Like, instead of being intimidated by how complex the Bible is, maybe we can be excited by it.
Yeah.
Like, oh, there's a mystery here. Let's put on our detective hats and dig in.
That's the spirit. That's what I find so inspiring about Peyton's approach. It's not about dumbing down the Bible or giving easy answers. It's about inviting us into that process, the messy, beautiful, and sometimes a frustrating process of really wrestling with these ancient texts and figuring out what they mean to us.
So to bring this back to our listeners, you out there right now, what's one passage that's always tripped you up? That you've never really felt like you grasped.
Pick that one. It doesn't have to be some huge, long theological thing. Even just one verse is fine.
And try applying some of what we've learned from Peyton today. Break it down phrase by phrase. Think about the context. Look it up in some different translations. And most importantly, talk about it with someone else. Maybe there's a friend who's also wrestling with that same passage. Or a pastor or a teacher you can go to.
And don't be afraid to ask those questions that you might feel are dumb. Remember Peyton in Romans, sometimes the most honest answer is, I don't know. And that's okay.
Yeah.
It just means there's more to learn.
And who knows? You might discover something totally new, some new nuance or insight that you've never noticed before.
That's the beauty of the Bible. It's a living text, and it keeps speaking to us in new ways, even after all these centuries.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into Peyton's lecture, what are some of those key takeaways we want our listener to walk away with today?
I think the biggest one is that shift from passive reading to like active engagement. It's about realizing that we're not just like receivers of information. We're participants in this process of uncovering meaning.
And that process isn't always easy or straightforward. It takes humility, it takes patience, and it takes that willingness to wrestle with those difficult questions.
But that's also what makes it so rewarding. When we really put in the effort, when we dig beneath the surface, the Bible comes alive in ways we never thought possible.
I love that. It's like we're not just reading the Bible, we're having this conversation with it.
Exactly. And that conversation can continue. You know, it can go on throughout our whole lives. It can deepen our understanding and it can transform how we see the world.
It's pretty amazing how just one lecture can kind of make us totally rethink how we approach something as familiar as the Bible.
Right.
You know, I'm definitely feeling inspired to like dust off my highlighters and dig in with like fresh eyes after this.
Yeah, that's what good teaching does, right? It opens up these new possibilities, new ways of seeing things. And Peyton's passion for this topic is just so contagious.
He's like that friend who learned something cool and they're just bursting to tell you about it. And in this case, what he's sharing has the power to like change the way we read the Bible for the rest of our lives.
Yeah, and it's not just about us understanding as individuals either. Think about like the impact this could have on whole communities, on churches, you know, like how we all interpret these ancient texts in the modern world.
That's such a good point. It's like if we can all become more skilled at unpacking the meaning behind those words, maybe we can have better conversations, you know, deeper connections, and even maybe bridge some of those divides that come from misinterpretations.
Absolutely. It's about moving past those like surface level readings and really engaging with the text in a way that respects its complexity and depth.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, I'm curious, what's like one thing that really stood out to you from Peyton's lecture? Something that you're going to take with you into your own study of the Bible?
You know, what really struck me was that emphasis on humility. Sometimes I think we come to the Bible thinking we're supposed to have all the answers, you know,
right,
that we should have it all figured out. And then when we run into a passage that we just don't get, it can feel like we're failing somehow.
Like if we don't have the perfect theological response to every verse, we're not good Christians or something.
Yeah, exactly. But Peyton reminds us that it's okay to not know. It's okay to struggle. It's okay to question. And that's often where the most profound insights come from anyway.
It's like that saying about the unexamined life not being worth living. We could say the same thing about how we read the Bible, right?
Totally.
If we're not actively engaging with it, questioning it, wrestling with it, we're missing out on so much of the richness.
I completely agree. It's in that struggle, you know, that willingness to be okay with not knowing everything that our faith really gets to grow.
So, to everyone listening out there, we hope this deep dive has left you feeling curious. Maybe even a little bit of that, like, holy discontent.
Yeah, don't be afraid to challenge your assumptions. Ask those tough questions and, you know, approach the Bible with both reverence and a healthy dose of skepticism.
And remember, you don't have to do this alone. There are tons of resources out there, commentaries, study guides, different translations, and of course, communities of people who are wrestling with these same questions.
So keep exploring, keep digging deeper, and keep the conversation going. You never know what you might find along the way.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive, and we'll see you next time for another adventure in understanding.